We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Marco Marquez, and now Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com. Hello, Matt. How are you?
I am just dandy, Stephen. How about yourself this morning?
Doing very well. Do you like the idea that the new quarterback from Mizzou is in his seventh year of college football and his high school wide receiver was DK Metcalf?
That's pretty cool.
It is, isn't it?
It is pretty cool. And hey, being that old, it worked out for Brandon Weeden at Oklahoma State. So hey, let's give it a go. Let's see what happens.
I mean, he's mature. He's married. He has a kid. He played his high school ball with DK Metcalf.
He's got an IRA. Yeah. So let's
do this. Let's get this done. And so I thought you'd like that. I thought you'd enjoy that little tidbit. Right now, Nate has no idea what I'm talking about, but he's nodding his approval. So
I'm surprised his high school teammate wasn't Randy Moss.
No kidding, right? But hey, if he can throw the football, let's go. You know. Matt Derrick, is it that big a deal that Melvin Ingram signed with the Dolphins? Are people overreacting? Is it a shoulder shrug for you? What's your reaction?
I mean, I think you're absolutely fair and right to be disappointed. I mean, he absolutely would have helped out this team this year. But what is Melvin Ingram and what was he going to be for this team? I mean, he might have been a starter, but I would think that actually there's a pretty good chance that George Karloftis and Frank Clark would be the starters anyway. And Ingram at this point in his career, Chiefs would probably be looking for him to be more of a, 30-40% of the snaps kind of a player. He's insurance if Karloftis isn't coming along the way you want. Maybe he plays a little bit more, but you're talking about, missing out on a niche role player. I mean, it's disappointing because the Chiefs need that player, but I don't think that it's, the end of the world or anything like that.
Do you believe that the Chiefs were not more aggressive in re-signing Melvin Ingram because they believe that they have the answer on their roster, in Mike, of course, Frank Clark and George Karloftis are the starters, but as far as depth, Mike Dana, Josh Kando, Malik Herring is a popular name to bring up now. They feel better about their depth than we do, or do they have something up their sleeve?
I mean, both of those things could actually be true. I mean, to a degree, the Chiefs feel like their pass rush last year was, I think, better than the rest of us do because they feel like that they were affecting the quarterback. I mean, they'll point to the hurries and say, hey, this team was one of the leaders in the league in hurries.
Joe Burrow begs to differ, Matt.
Well, and I have a separate whole debate and conversation and question about what is the value of hurrying the quarterback, because I didn't see the Bengals hurry Patrick Mahomes at all in the second half. They just sat back and played coverage. Maybe there's even a question, especially in the AFC with all these quarterbacks, are you better off putting your resources in the secondary? And I'm not just talking about money and draft picks, but I'm just talking about pure numbers. rather than just going after the quarterback. Because, you know, I mean, teams have had their most success against Patrick Mahomes doing exactly that. But, I mean, to the question about, you know, where the Chiefs are now, I mean, they do feel like that their pass rush was better a year ago than maybe outsiders thought that it was. I mean, and Karloftis is a big part of, you know, hoping that those hurries become sacks and hits this year. And maybe even just a little bit of reversion to the mean. I mean, you know, the argument would be that hurries usually result in the sacks. And if they didn't one year, maybe you just had some bad luck and the good luck will come your way the next season. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's at least one argument. And then they may not be done. You know, certainly, you know, Brett Veach kind of even alluded to the fact that if they got the Orlando Brown deal done, a lot of options become possible, which would be just beyond, you know, a Band-Aid of just, you know, slapping on another 33-year-old veteran from the free agent pile. But maybe you look at the trade market and you see what's out there, what may be available. Players are going to become available. I mean, maybe a high-round draft pick that's not fitting in with his team is available, a la a Reggie Ragland, which, remember, that kind of deal didn't happen until training camp. So, to me, I think there's still a lot of options. And the other thing, not to forget about Melvin Ingram, is that there's distinct chance that the Chiefs could have done a lot to try and keep him, but he just wanted to be in Miami. He wanted to be in maybe a different situation and in a different location.
So the trade market is intriguing in that regard.
In what regard?
Thanks for the Jeff Long reference. Yeah, appreciate it. Do you think that, and when you talk about that, do you think it's like, are we talking like lower level trades, like, you know, we're depth type pieces, or could they be in the market for a big name type trade?
I mean, they have the draft capital certainly going forward, that if they wanted to, you know, try and swing for the fences and get a player that is, you know, going to be maybe a free agent next season or has one more year left in their deal, that, you know, that they're comfortable, and that'd be somebody you're comfortable giving a longer term extension to. But hey, if you got Orlando Brown done, that at least becomes part of the equation. I mean, you could actually think about that. I'm not completely enamored with next year's free agent class as much either. I mean, as far as, you know, players that I think would at least be in the ballpark of reasonable that you could get and then would be, you know, ready to commit some money to. I mean, it's going to look a little bit like this year's class, which, once again, I mean, going back to March, I mean, is there any of those free agent deals that if you're the Chiefs, you wish you had matched? I don't know that I can make that case, because this free agent market was really overpriced. And a lot of veterans got a lot of money that I think their teams are going to regret. So I don't feel like the Chiefs necessarily did anything wrong this year. But, you know, Brett Veach, you know, and if he goes and sticks to the plan that they have alluded to, which was that this pass rush and this defensive line is a multi-year fix, and it wasn't just going to be something that they could go out like the offensive line last year and fix immediately, but was something that they were going to have to piecemeal together, that's probably the safer strategy rather than forcing a move now. But like I said, you get Orlando Brown done and then a lot of options are on the table right now. Yeah. I mean, you're kind of looking at what's the low hanging fruit out there. What's the player that maybe has been a disappointment, you know, a Taco Carlton kind of a player, you know, that hasn't fit in his current team, but maybe he's looking for a change.
Kind of like when they acquired Emmanuel Ogba. That worked out pretty well.
That was another excellent example. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've referenced Orlando Brown a couple of times. Are they going to get something done, in your opinion, or will he play under the franchise tag this year?
I mean, I feel like the longer that we go without Orlando Brown having an agent and getting ready to get things done, that, you know, we probably are looking to play under the franchise tag this year. And if I'm the Chiefs, you know, honestly, I mean, as it's not, it's a little bit different than the situation with Chris Jones, where they knew Chris Jones really, really well. I still don't know Orlando Brown a lot. So I could see that, you know, especially if you get closer and closer to training camp, I don't know that there's a whole lot of downside. I mean, they were prepared to, under the salary cap, to let him play under the tag one, you know, this season. So, and they can certainly do it. There's nothing stopping them from doing that. So I feel like those two factors, I mean, the Chiefs just, you know, maybe needing to know Orlando Brown a little bit more, needing to have him inside the building, to see where he's at physically and everything. I think you may need to know that before you give a guy a lot of money. And if he doesn't have an agent, you're probably not going to give a guy a lot of money.
So what do you mean by they don't know him well enough? Like, what didn't they learn about him over the past year?
I mean, I still think that you probably don't have a good grasp on, you know, how the player, you know, works during the off season. And this year, you don't get that grasp at all because, you know, he's not around. So you don't know what his workout program has been. You don't know, you know, if he were under contract, you don't know if he'd be around the facility and what he'd be doing. You know, with Chris Jones, they had a history. I mean, they obviously knew what his habits were, what he did all the time. I mean, when a guy's just been on your team one season, there's still a lot of things that you just don't know about their consistency. And, you know, with Chris Jones, once again, I mean, that was a player that they felt comfortable paying because they felt like they knew the guy, they knew his character, and he knew his work habits, and those weren't going to change once he got a big deal. That's not true for everybody. And I don't know if it's true for Orlando Brown or not, and I'm not sure the Chiefs know that for sure either.
Marco sent me a picture of Orlando Brown. Looked like he was working out. He looked mean and lean. Look at this, Nate. What are you? Looking good.
He looks pretty.
Still picture.
Looks pretty svelte.
Looks like he's in good shape. Did you see that, Matt, Derek? That
I saw the one of him playing tennis or trying to play tennis.
This is the picture of him. Send that to Matt, Derek, would you please? I don't know. Marco searches for pictures of guys working out and then sends them to me whenever he finds them.
It just happened to be Orlando Brown.
Right, exactly.
I respect that.
Right. Matt, Nate wants to know if the Chiefs should sign Jadeveon Clowney.
I don't know.
Good answer.
Well, that doesn't clear it up for me at all, Matt.
Doesn't really, does
it? See, that's why he didn't want to ask you.
Man.
I mean, I don't know Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, clearly.
What?
I know of him, but I don't know him. But it's a guy that's bounced around a lot. And for a Chiefs team that's just brought in 10 rookies and is going to have a lot of young players on this team and has really been talking this entire season about, you know, this offseason about the right players and the right fits and the right 53 and all of this, is he the right fit? I don't know. I'm not sold, but I don't know. But I would say decidedly on the fence on it because I just don't know if it would work out or not.
You worried he'd be a bad presence in the locker room or something?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, when you see a guy, you know, bounce around a lot and doesn't find a home and, you know, that there's been a hesitance to pay him a lot of money, I think it begs the question about, you know, whether or not that he's a good presence in the locker room or not, whether or not he'd be a good player to have around a bunch of younger guys.
So if the price was right, it sounds like you'd take a chance, but you wouldn't break the bank for him.
You know, I had someone I was talking to yesterday that mentioned Ryan Kerrigan, and I you know what, I think that's actually somebody who'd be a really good fit because, you know, as the point he made, it's a player who is very similar to George Karloftis as far as skill goes. Would probably, you know, fit into the Spags scheme that way very, very well. He is kind of a Spags defensive end. But, that you know, he's a guy that absolutely, I mean, I think Frank Clark is a good mentor for a young player to watch as far as, you know, the habits that you get on the field, the habits in, off the field in the meeting rooms and everything. I think Frank Clark's a good mentor for that. And I think he's willing to share things with a younger player. But, you know, Frank Clark's also a kind of a different physical talent than Karloftis. Having a guy like Kerrigan around that's kind of a power guy like himself, I think would be another good influence to have.
I'm a little perplexed by that characterization of Frank Clark, especially after what we just said about Orlando Brown. Like, the Chiefs don't know enough about his habits in the offseason and all of that. I mean, Frank Clark was arrested twice last offseason, wasn't he?
Oh, I don't think you're saying, you know, to tell George Karloftis to go riding around town with, you know, Frank in his car or anything like that. But I mean, as far as the Frank Clark that, you know, in the facility, that's on the field, nobody's ever questioned, you know, his work ethic, his, you know, the effort that he puts into film study. He's obviously talked a lot about, you know, his notebooks and how many notes that he takes during a season. And And he's also talked about the fact that, you know, about players who were important to him when he came into the league that showed him the way, and that he's willing to do that too and share and do that for other players. So, I mean, that's why to me, I mean, I say, hey, in the facility, yeah, I think Frank Clark is a really good mentor. Like, hey, outside the facility, maybe not. But that's not what you're asking him to do.
You just don't want him rolling around with him with, you know.
Just make sure there's no duffel bags in the car.
Whatever.
So, you're around closer than me, Matt, but it seems to me like Frank Clark has the concentration level, the effort level have been inconsistent since he's been a Chief. He doesn't seem to me like he does not. My impression of him is not of a tremendous lunch pail guy. I mean, am I wrong there, Stephen? I mean, like, I don't feel like he's been some consistent. I think of like a Tom Bahali when you say something like that. I don't think of a Frank Clark. Am I wrong there? I don't know. I guess.
I mean, to me, there's a distinction between, you know, your play being affected by injuries and physical issues rather than, you know, your differential between that and work ethic. I don't think there's ever been a question about. I mean, because hey, you talk about Tamba. Tamba's a great player too, but you know what? Tom Bahali didn't practice most of the time, especially there at the end of his career. Whereas, you know, Frank Clark, when he's been healthy, I mean, he's out there. He doesn't take any days off or anything like that. I mean, every player's different. I mean, in Tom's situation, I mean, hey, he had bad knees, so I wouldn't have him practice either. Don't get me wrong. But I haven't heard anyone, and honestly, I mean, it's been the exact opposite, that Frank Clark inside the building is a great influence. And honestly, if he was disruptive, Chiefs could have walked away from this year. I mean, if they felt like that he was not a good presence to have in the locker room, and that what he wasn't trying, and that if healthy, he wasn't still a factor, there would have been no reason for him to be back this year.
Okay, so then what do you think Frank Clark? Because that's the whole problem here. Because most people feel like Frank Clark isn't productive enough to count on and to be a starter, right? And that's why people think that, you know, Melvin Ingram should have been here, or go after Jadeveon Clowney, or go acquire at least another edge rusher. A lot of people, including myself, were hoping the Chiefs would draft two edge rushers, and they didn't. But they did spend a lot of draft capital and throw it at the defense. So then, what is Frank Clark 2022 version? What are your expectations for him? Can he be better than he was, more consistent than he was last year? Or do you think he'll decline? He'll never get back to what he was, like, say, his first year with the Chiefs, or the player that the Chiefs thought they were trading for?
I mean, can he be more consistent and more productive? Yeah. I mean, because last year was a bad year for Frank Clark. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it's, once again, it's going to come down to his health and, you know, where his body is at this point in his career. If he can kind of, you know, set some of the injury issues and some of the, even, you know, just medical issues that he's had behind him and stay healthy and, you know, not have problems with weight and, you know, being able to just consistently work and everything like that, then, yeah, I mean, I think there's still some productivity in him. Is he a 16-sack guy? No, I mean, I don't think that the body of work has proven that. Can he be an upgrade over Frank Clark in 21? Yeah, he could be. I wouldn't be banking on it. I mean, I would if I'm the Chiefs. I'd assume that I would get, you know, similar production from Frank Clark or even slightly less. Just because I would be kind of be on the safe side of things. So, no, I mean, Frank Clark is, I think, you kind of know what the floor is with him. The ceiling for what he could be in 1 year in 22 is higher than that. It's not as high as what you were expecting in 2019 when he got here. It's not probably as high as even what his cap number is going to be this year. But, and, you know, at this point in his career, remember, I think the Chiefs have asked him to do an awful lot. I mean, we talk about, and, you know, we're saying, you know, Frank Clark here, you know, maybe having some consistency issues or anything of this nature. The Chiefs have asked a guy that had been broken down to be on the field an awful lot. And if they ask Frank Clark to maybe play once again, be a rotational piece, maybe he does start, but he doesn't play more than 45, 50 snaps a game and you're rotating guys in there, then maybe he can be a lot more productive than if you're leaving him out there for 75% of the snaps and asking him to do a lot more than maybe his body can do at this point.
And so that's the whole question. Do they have enough depth where they don't have to ask so much of him? I think that's why, you know, a lot of people wanted Melvin Ingram back or maybe two edge rushers drafted. Yeah. And so then if you don't have to ask so much of him, then maybe he can be more productive. But they do they have the depth now to do that? Or are they going to rely too much on Frank Clark? And so do they need, in order for them to utilize him the way you just described, do they have enough right now to do that, or do they need to add to the depth?
Well, and to me, you know, it's a bigger kind of systemic question across the defensive line. You know, is this group better than it was a year ago at this time? I mean, remember, a year ago, I don't think they'd signed Alex Okafor yet. So, honestly, you had pretty much the same cast here, except that you had the question about, was Chris Jones going to be playing defensive end or defensive tackle? If Chris Jones is healthy and playing defensive tackle all year long for you, then you've got a better Chris Jones than he was last year when he was battling the wrist injury and, you know, the groin was a little bit of a problem, too. If Frank Clark can be better than he was a year ago, which, like I said, I mean, it's possible. It's not necessarily likely, but it's possible. Is George Karloftis an upgrade over any other option you had last year? Probably. I mean, if he's what you hope that he is, then yes, he absolutely is. You've got Joshua Kando. You've got Mike Dana. You're hoping that maybe those guys can break out a little bit. And then, you know, you mentioned about adding another draft pick. Honestly, I think the Chiefs probably feel like they do have another draft pick in Malik Herring.
Right.
Because, hey, if he doesn't tear his ACL, you know, that's probably a fifth or a sixth round pick a year ago. So, you know, you can almost probably even think of it in the fact that, hey, the Chiefs did take two shots. They took a late round chance on Malik Herring. That's basically what he is. So, yeah, I mean, you're taking a lot of chances. But again, you know, it's a systemic question. I mean, is the Chiefs' pass rush, can it be helped by the fact that their secondary is going to be a lot better? You know, increasingly around this league, like I said, I mean, it's especially in the AFC, it's about defending the pass. I mean, it is about coverage more than it is necessarily getting after the quarterback as quickly as you can. I mean, if the Chiefs are better in the back, the backfield, it may make the pass rush better. We usually talk about it the opposite, being the pass rush makes the secondary better. This may be a case where, hey, they've invested in other places where they felt like that they could upgrade. You know, and like I said, the Chiefs never really, even though I think that everybody outside the organization wanted to see a, you know, 2021-like rebuilding of the offensive line with the defensive line this year, you know, Brett Veach and company didn't think that was possible. It wasn't something that was ever in the equation because of just what was out there. But they felt like it was a multi-year step. So if they're better this year than they were a year ago, I mean, to the Chiefs at least, I think they're going to feel like they're moving in the right direction.
Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
It's a pleasure, guys. Take care, everybody.
That is Matt Derrick. We'll talk to Trini Kuznerik next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Well, let's say hello to our good friend, Trini Kuznerik. You can follow her on Twitter, Trini, T-R-E-N-N-I, with NBC Boston. Hello, Trini, how are you?
Hi, guys. What's up?
How you doing?
Well, you know, I'm just lamenting the fact that I love to go to bed at like 9:30, 10 o'clock, and I had to stay up to watch that bleep show last night until like after 11, and it wasn't worth my time or anything. But I'm fine. I got still got 8 hours of sleep. I'm going to talk to you guys, go for a run. It's fine. It's fine, Steven. No panic here. Let me tell you,
8 hours is a pipe dream.
I was going to say.
I haven't had 8 hours of sleeping.
It's been at least a decade.
I don't know how you guys function. I don't know how you function.
My brain doesn't start working until about 9 o'clock, so that's when people should listen. So.
I also find myself randomly falling asleep during parts of the day when I'm just...
during the show.
Yeah,
actually,
well, sometimes during the show, yeah.
So
When...
Pardon me for not knowing exactly. So when's the wedding?
August 27th. So it's coming up. It's for just a little over 3 months. And it's like, so we sent out our invitations like a week and a half ago.
Oh, you didn't get yours, Stephen? I got mine in the mail last week.
And it's like, you know, the RSVPs are like starting to roll in. And I'm like, every day, I curse and say, why didn't I hire a wedding planner?
Right.
Like at this point, when you spend so much money on a wedding, like what's a couple thousand dollars more at this point someone to handle all of this for me? Like I'm literally every day like, okay, you know, Bill and Maureen Martin, yes to the wedding, yes in a spreadsheet. Bill will have the filet, medium rare.
Wow.
Mo will have the chicken piccata, copy paste, like color coded spreadsheet. I'm like, this is my nightmare.
It better be medium. Bill could be a real red ass, I know. So you.
I got one yesterday. I'm a medium rare gal. My good friend Jen sent me her RSVP yesterday with her meal choice, and she picked a filet medium well. And I was like, I had no
Jen.
Idea for a month. I was like, I had no idea you were a monster.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Just order a hockey puck while you're at it.
Wow.
Right?
And so, yeah, that's why Susan and I just went to Vegas and got married by Elvis. And so we're not going to invite anybody, just whatever, we'll deal with it. But you, what's the venue? Where are you guys getting married at?
We are getting married at a what is a ski lodge in the winter, but a wedding venue in the summer in Killington, Vermont. It's actually it's amazing, and the people who run it are great. It's an Irish immigrant, Emmett, who moved to the States years ago to be closer to family. Had a daughter, was raising her in Florida, and was like, I want to raise her somewhere that reminds me of home. And so he bought this like 1950s ski lodge in Killington, Vermont, about 10 years ago. And has just been slowly updating it, and he decided to make it a wedding venue. So not only do we get it for the day of our wedding, but our venue fee allows us to have guests stay there Wednesday through Sunday at checkout. So, like, we'll go up to our venue on Wednesday, and we'll be there through, like, the wedding on Sunday. So it's, like, a long weekend. We'll golf. I mean, I won't golf, but Sean will golf. I'll hike and run, and we'll have, like, a welcome barbecue and a bonfire with tipsy s'mores on Friday,
wow.
And then the wedding and the reception on Saturday. And Thursday will be a rehearsal and like a dinner with like our family and our out of town, some of the out of town friends who are coming. But yeah, we had two choices. You always have a budget, right, for a wedding. And we could have done like some fancy schmancy city wedding in Boston, but that's not really our vibe. Like we're both pretty laid back, or we could take that money and do like a 3-day party. So instead, we're taking that money and doing a 3-day party in Vermont.
See, like, but when you were a youngster in Wisconsin, did you ever think you'd be getting married in a ski lodge in Vermont?
No, but I wasn't also a kid who was like, I wasn't, and this is not going to shock either of you, but I wasn't like that little girl who was like, Mom, can I borrow your wedding veil and your wedding dress and shape of my wedding day?
Boy, I was.
Yep.
I literally used to play like advertising executive when I was a kid. Like that was like my day.
This won't shock you either. I was always, Mom, can I put on your wedding dress?
Steven was parading around in that thing.
Steven, why?
Mom, can I wear your crown tiara?
Steven,
your son's got the wedding dress on again.
Damn it, he's 15 years old. I've had enough of this.
I'm looking at pictures of Killington, Vermont right now. Beautiful. I've been to Vermont once. It is the Green Mountain State. Beautiful up there.
I used to do reads for the Vermont teddy bears, and so that's my connection there.
Yeah.
It is, and it's like super laid back and stuff. I mean, like, it's honestly, like, we wanted to do something that was sort of like destination-y without going to like a Caribbean island type of a thing, because that's not really either of us, like, what we like love. And so we like the places in like Montana. I looked at some places in Wisconsin, and the only one I liked was a venue that my cousin got married at 3 years ago. I was like, I can't get married in the same place, like less than 3 years after you.
Right.
We looked like in the Pacific Northwest, and this just, you know, you just get a feel about a place. And They have an Irish pub right on site, so we can have our after party there. And they're like, we don't care if you stay up till 4 a.m. Like, it's your wedding, you paid for it, you guys can stay and party as long as you want. And I'm like, done. That's our place.
So,
but we're getting a puppy June 4th, so we also have that to contend with now.
So were you like, okay, here's the sports calendar. We got a plan around this.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, hey. You know, you're
right before the Pats get really going.
Because it sounds like August. Sounds like you did. You know, you're courteous to the sports people in your life.
Actually, we probably would have gotten married in October when it's like the leaves are changing. But this won't surprise you. By the time we got engaged in October, people are getting people are just like, weddings are so hard right now.
Everybody's getting married now because they couldn't. Yeah, yeah,
yes, because they couldn't. So. Like a lot of the venues we looked at only had like August or late October, early November dates. And I was like, I am not getting married in Vermont in late October, like with brown leaves behind me. So we chose late August. So part of why we chose late August is this is so terrible. But we're like, well, there'll be people who like can't come, right? Because it'll be like the start of school just before Labor Day. And now we're not getting like any, and obviously regrets always come later than like ours, like yes, RSVPs, but like every day I was like, you thought these people weren't going to come, Sean, they're coming. And I'm like, you just see like the total dollar amount just going up with everybody that RSVPs yes for everything. not that we don't want people to come to our wedding, we do, but it was like, oh, all right, well, this guy's a headmaster of a school. They live out of state. There's no way they're going to come to our wedding the other day. Ding, ding, we're coming. I have a cousin who I was like, oh, they'll never come. They've got three girls. Their mom and dad will come out. Their sister and brother-in-law will. But the girls are young. No way they're going to get someone to watch them for a long weekend. Sure they are. They're coming out. I was like, all right.
They want that filet.
That's right.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah, it is a tasty filet, and it's open bar. So,
wedding crashers.
People
Stephen
will fly
and
anywhere in the country to go to an open bar wedding.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
So, congratulations. You sound very excited. That sounds awesome. So,
it's going to be great once it gets here. It's just like I love I love my fiance very much, and I love you guys very much. But let's be honest, the bride does most of the work planning the wedding, and the guy just says, "Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine." No, I don't really like that. Yeah, that's fine. And you're the one, like, Sean isn't getting every RSVP in his inbox, like, all day long, and then, like, punching it into his spreadsheet.
Trenny, as a fellow Polak, I do want you to know that at my wedding, I was in charge of booking the polka band. So I did do some work.
Oh, you had You had a polka band?
Oh, you're damn right I did. Everybody in my family had a polka band at their wedding. So, yes.
Bring this man to town so we can put him through the Kansas City Ringer.
That's right. We need to do that. We need to vet this man.
So we could put him to the test of Kansas City.
I wonder when the Patriots will play. They don't play the Chiefs at the Chiefs.
No.
They don't play the Chiefs at all this year, do they?
Mm-mm. No.
No, we're on that first place schedule now.
Whoa. Wow.
I know, you should brag about it.
That's right.
You guys should. Your team's awesome. I know, because that's one place I've never seen a football game? Is Arrowhead?
We got to fix that.
Yep.
We fix that real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so.
So let's keep an eye on that schedule. There's got to be a point where the Patriots will play again. I mean, it's been what? It was that year that they played. The last time they played was that year that they started 2-2 and then went on to win the Super Bowl and they lost on Monday night, right? That's the last time the Patriots played in Kansas City? When everybody was asking whether or not, remember when there was like the whole thing where afterwards Bill Belichick was asked if he was thinking about starting Jimmy Garoppolo over Tom Brady, and I thought Bill's head was going to explode?
Remember when Cam Newton tested, well, didn't he have COVID, and so they had to start Brian Hoyer or some.
Because somebody ended up hugging Patrick Mahomes after the game.
Yeah, Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah,
get your hands off Patrick Mahomes.
Yes. So, I forgot about that because it was kind of a forgettable
game. Yeah, right. Okay, so it's awesome. It's great to catch up with you, and now we wanted to also have you on to talk about the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. And so I'm watching that game last night. I'm thinking, okay, no Marcus Smart, no Al Horford. They're on the road, and then, damn, they're up 13 points in the first half. And I'm thinking, boy, if they win this game one on the road without Smart, without Horford, it's good to go. But then, Miami went on a 22-2 run, in the third quarter, outscored the Celtics 39-14 in a disastrous third quarter. So what do you take away from that game without Marcus Smart and Al Horford?
I mean, I think where they missed Al Horford, I mean, listen, you're always going to miss Marcus Smart on the defensive end. You're also going to miss him in terms of facilitating. But I will say this about Marcus Smart. He can fall into the same bad habits. Like what happened in the third quarter yesterday, and this happens far too often with the Celtics, and I cannot for the life of me wrap my brain around why they don't learn their lessons. Because when they start, when things start badly for them, things spiral very quickly and they revert to bad habits. So like in the first half yesterday, they were moving the ball well, they were switching on their screens, they were defending Miami, they were making it tough for them to make any shots. The minute that Miami starts making some shots and playing more aggressively and more physical, what happens? You've got Grant Williams and Jason Tatum not getting back on defense, whining to the officials. You've got them bringing the ball, like basically like, you know, maybe Derek White inbounds the ball to Jason Tatum. He brings it up court. He never makes another pass. He dribbles into traffic, turns the ball over, or chucks up a terrible shot. And I think where they missed Al Horford is Al's like really, in those moments, he's a veteran, right? He's a lot older than those guys. He's 35, almost 36 years old, and he's a calming presence. Not always, but sometimes he can be a guy, and he's not even there, right, because he's in the COVID protocol. So that, to me, is where they really missed him. And I think they just also missed his length, like having to rely completely on Daniel Tice with Bam Adebayo out there. Although Robert Williams had a great game. My biggest concern always about the Celtics, and I really thought that they were starting to move through this, is like they're kind of immature still. And they, like, Jimmy Butler gets in this zone and he doesn't let go and he becomes kind of mean. Jason Tatum, when things go bad, becomes kind of a whiner. And it looks at the refs and shrugs his shoulders, and it's like, no, grow up, buddy. Like, knock it off. And that's what's frustrating. That's what was frustrating for me last night, is it's just, like, the turnovers and the missed free throws. Like, not to take anything away from Miami, because Miami played – they made unbelievable adjustments at halftime. But, like, the Celtics also just beat themselves. And that is what's so frustrating when you watch them, is like at times they look like one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NBA. And other times they look like me out there.
Wow.
And that.
I like the fact that, Stephen, did you notice the way Trenny said that Marcus Smart falls into some of the same habits?
Yeah.
So he falls down a lot.
Right. Nate doesn't
He's
like
an
Marcus
Oscar
Smart.
Award winning flopper.
I actually think
Oscar
he I actually I actually am a huge fan of his.
He was getting super pissed on the bench. He was, yeah. You know, you talk about Horford wasn't there, but Marcus Smart was making his presence known.
I know he's maddening because of all that stuff, but I am a big fan of his because I did not expect him to have the type of NBA career that he has had. Watching him in college, I thought, you know, he'd be a bench player. And he has, I mean, I think just because of his mentality, I think he's got an incredible mentality. Yeah. And what frustrates you, all the flopping and stuff, is really just because he's an incredible competitor. And he'll resort to any means necessary to try to get the advantage on his opponent. And I think, like, you want to talk about a guy that has made the absolute most out of what he has physically. I'm a huge fan. I think they miss him big time when he's not on the floor.
I mean, he's just like, and this is frustrating to me too, because, you know, listen, Jason Tatum is an otherworldly talent. Like when his game is on, it's, again, he's a top five. When his game is on, it's top five NBA. But when he's off, it's so bad. And it's like, you can't, I want to see Jason Tatum react the way Marcus Smart does. Get angry. Fire up the guys. Like, don't leave it to Marcus, who's on the bench, or Grant Williams. Like, the fact that Grant Williams is going up and down the sideline last night, like, trying to rile guys up. Now, maybe that's partially because he's mic'd and he's trying to play it up for the cameras and ESPN and whatnot. And I understand, too, that, like, not everybody's personality is that, and Jalen and Jason are a little bit quieter. But you got to do something. If you want to be the star on the Boston Celtics and you're Jason Tatum, like, you have to find that next gear and figure out how to calm your team down, even though you're only 24 years old. Because this is also your fourth Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I guess I just sort of forgot. This is the fourth time they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals in 6 years. And, like, if they can't get over the hump again this time, I think you do have to start to look at, like, okay, well, the makeup of this team. I mean, Jaylen Brown, too, last night just drove me bananas. Like, I feel like he has, like, regressed at points this season. And every time he touches the ball, I'm like, do you, like, have you played basketball before? Like, just pass it to someone else because you have no court vision and you're always dribbling it off, like, your own foot. So, which I don't know how you can not know how to dribble when you're an NBA player.
Yeah, big feet. So do you think Boston will win the series?
So I have them going into yesterday, and this is before the Smart injury and before we knew about Al Horford, I had them winning in six. Listen, can they? Absolutely. I mean, we saw this exact same story play out against Milwaukee. They had a long layoff, and they just looked rusty, and the Bucks came in and just crushed them in game one at home, and then they came back and crushed Milwaukee in game two. If Marcus Smart is able to play tomorrow and they come out and they win and they steal home court from Miami, yeah, I certainly think they still have an opportunity to win. But I'll tell you what, man, Miami is good, and Eric Spoelstra is an unbelievable coach. And he gets, like, there isn't a super – I guess you could call Jimmy Butler a superstar. I don't know. He doesn't seem to have that, but he comes up – I guess it's getting harder to argue that he's not. Like, when he needs to carry his team and when he needs to, like, calm down and have a big moment in a big game, he finds a way to do it, and he did that last night. So I think it's going to be a tough – this might go seven, and they might not win. After last night, I'm a little more hesitant, but I will say this. The Celtics are really good at bouncing back, and Jason Tatum – sometimes, and this is what drives me nuts about him, is sometimes he needs extra motivation. And I wonder if he looks at the game that Jimmy Butler had last night and the way everyone's talking about Jimmy Butler versus the way they're talking about Jason Tatum, and that fuels him in game two. Because he loves to prove people wrong. Like, he kind of needs that chip, that he needs the odds stacked against him. And that team needs the odds stacked against them, which, you know, take it for what it's worth, that kind of frustrates me. I mean, you should be able to win even if people think you can win. But it wouldn't surprise me if they come out and win game two.
All right, Chenny, final question for you. How pissed off is everyone that the Red Sox are 13 games behind the Yankees in the middle of May?
God, everybody, I mean, this won't surprise you at all, but everyone's like, fire high and bloom. This isn't Tampa. Get them out of here. We're not a small market team. I think people are most mad, though. And this is what's frustrating, is like, and I don't know, like, Xander Bogaerts clearly wants to stay in Boston. Rafael Devers wants to test the waters, but, like, you're a big market team. You have the money. There's no reason you shouldn't be making offers to these guys that they can't refuse. And I think that's what's most frustrating to everyone, is like, you saw Mookie Betts walk away, but you signed Chris Sale. So it's just some of the decisions that have been made recently in terms of, like, roster construction, where I think people are like, what exactly, like, where are your priorities? Why are we spending money on this guy and not that one? And I think if they lose Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, and Rafael Devers, I think people will lose their minds. And that, I think, is what they're frustrated about, is that there's no reason you couldn't have addressed some of the deficiencies in the offseason. It's not like you don't have the money. And that really makes people mad, because it's also, like, they're the most expensive team to watch in baseball. Like, it's the most expensive venue to go to. So, I don't know how many of the games you've seen or, like, the stands, but they're not selling out games. Like, I have people who are like, hey, can you help me get tickets to a Red Sox game? I was like, yeah, redsox.com. Like, it's not like the old days where you have to buy overpriced tickets on StubHub or something. Like, you can just go to the box office and buy tickets, which is no bueno, especially because the last couple weeks the weather here has been really nice. Like, it's not like it's cold and crummy and you don't want to sit at Fenway at night. Like, it's actually been pretty nice to go watch baseball. Can't wait till my Brewers come in and crush them. Can't wait.
That's right. And, you know, not for nothing, I mean, the Royals aren't much better, but this Benintendi deal worked out pretty good for Kansas City. They traded a bunch of crap for him. So, hey, thanks. Tell everyone thank you.
You're welcome.
For Benny Biceps.
You're welcome.
You know, Trini, it's...
The ladies love him. Do the ladies love him in Kansas City? They love him.
Yeah. The ladies Susan St. John's been asking some questions about him, hasn't she?
Yeah, why do they call him Benny Biceps? Is he built that well? Like, well, I don't, you know. Susan, I haven't seen him without a shirt. So I don't know. I couldn't tell you, but he's...
You're like, weird. He looks great in my mom's wedding dress.
I've seen him without a shirt on. He's fit.
Right, Nazzy?
You know, he's fit, yeah. He's not one of these sluggy baseball players that, you know, just kind of... You know, hangs out around the candy jar.
Eats more chicken and beer than spinach and grilled chicken.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Trendy, we got to have you on more often. I know you're busy with the wedding and work and everything else, but...
You guys know I love you, and I will always find time for you. Thanks for fitting me in, too. I'm sorry that I couldn't make tomorrow work, but I'm actually going to a pretty cool breakfast tomorrow for an organization called Samaritans, which is a suicide hotline and helpline here. A friend of mine here actually had to use them, and they saved her life, and she asked me to go to the breakfast. So it's Mental Health Awareness Month, so be, you know...
That's why
mind is just as important as body. So support those organizations because they're doing really in your local area because they're doing amazing, amazing work right now in a time when a lot of people are in crisis. So
that's why you're awesome. We love you.
Yep, they go hand in hand.
Jenny, we will hopefully talk to you soon, okay?
All right, guys.
Thank you. Have a great day. That is Trendy Kuznarek, who is, man, how long has she been coming on the show?
15 years.
I can't keep track of nothing no more.
She told me she had been coming on since 2009 when we talked.
Yeah, that's about right. Trendy Kuznarek of NBC Sports Boston. That's the first chance you've had to hear her on the show.
Yeah,
you can see why people love her.
Yeah,
you know, more often. Whoever the producer is should book her more often.
I agree.
There we go. Yeah,
she's the best.
Who is the producer?
You know, well, that's a great question. Who's anything?
Who's been booking all these guests?
Marco's been running this show. He's the puppet master already.
Pulling strings right here on
Sports
Radio.
I'm a little disappointed he still hasn't given us a Dom DeLuise drop, though, you know.
Yeah, that's, you know. Oh, you know what I saw? For a three-day run, not that, but some of the AMC theaters are going to have Smokey and the Bandit.
It just can't hold up very well. No,
it can't.
No, I watched it with
it
my.
It can't hold up very well. But I'm making these damn kids go to watch it in the big screen. Yeah, you know, and they'll be mad.
Oh yeah,
you know.
But hey, get them some popcorn and a slushy.
Rich, you'll like
icy.
It. Rich, you'll like. Oh yeah, if they can spend $100 at the concession,
oh,
that'll be fine.
Well, that's just three items.
Rich, you'll like. Have you seen that, Marco? Has your dad showed you Smokey and the Bandit?
No, not yet. No.
What if I? I'll take you to see Smokey. Would you go?
When is it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'd go. The movies.
Would you be willing to go to smoke? I'll buy you some popcorn and a slushy, whatever you want. You know, would you take your son
like
to that?
Like I'm a St. John.
Oh, yeah, heck yeah.
Force my kids to watch. You're going to watch this. You thought this was funny when you were a kid? Yeah. And it's an adult, too.
They might think it's funny, like, they'll call it cringy funny. You know, like, it's...
You know who go see it? Quick.
Oh,
Steve
St.
John Sr.
Oh, yeah.
You love
Burt
it.
Burt Reynolds.
That's right.
He knows his way around a thing or
my
two.
My dad was a big Jackie Gleason fan, so that's what he... We'll take a break. Back after this on WHP.